Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jason Mitchell back on the show. Touch on a few things from the fall, and of course, it's early ice now, so we dig into the early ice stuff, but we also feature the Seal Craft. Jason recently launched an inflatable airboat business. It is a very fun, new, innovative product that solves a lot of problems for anglers and ultimately helps anglers extend their season by quite a bit, especially in the early ice and late ice time period when ice conditions are not conducive for driving vehicles around or even hiking in many cases. This inflatable airboat is absolutely the right tool for the job. We talk all about it in the podcast, so you're not going to want to miss that. But let's get to it here. We've got Jason Mitchell on the JMO Podcast. As we prepare for the upcoming ice fishing season, making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. If you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, I highly recommend you check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast that's put on by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, a phenomenal source of all kinds of topics happening at the Game and Fish Department throughout the seasons. Again, if you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast is for you. You'll find it anywhere you'll find the JMO Podcast, and if you want a shortcut, you can find a link in the description. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. The updates, these might go back a little ways. Tell me a little bit about how your summer season wrapped up, the fall season, fishing wise. I know you did a little bit of hunting. I'm curious about all that stuff, man. What is the update?
Oh goodness, it's been a blur. I mean, overall, I think we had a pretty good fall. You know, we had a lot of nice weather, and it's funny, we either had really nice weather where it was warm, beautiful. You know, I'm talking, you know, middle, late October, felt like we were wearing sweatshirts, you know, fishing, and then, mix in some 30, 40 mile an hour winds, you know, so it was either really nice or really windy, it seemed like. And then, you know, finally started getting cold here in November and, you know, started making ice. But, yeah, and obviously in the fall, you know, there's never enough to do or never enough time to do everything. There's too much to do. I always joke, I wish October, November lasted for, you know, 6 months instead of 2 months, you know, but, yeah, I did a lot of hunting, did a lot of waterfowl hunting, did quite a bit of deer hunting, and now we're staring at early ice. So
is there anything that was going on this fall where you kind of already had like early ice on the mind, scouting for spots or looking for locations with fish and all those things? Sometimes are kind of hot topics you know, on the street. So I was just curious if you had anything like that to expand on.
We're scouting year round, right? I mean, but one thing I'll say is, you know, like on Devil's Lake, for example, this fall, you know, it's really turned into a forward-facing sonar game, and you know, you're scooting around, you're looking for fish, and ultimately, you know, when we're fishing in the boat with forward-facing sonar, you know, we're looking for walleyes, and you know, invariably, you know, if you see a bunch of smaller fish that look like perch, I mean, it definitely, you know, definitely gets put on your radar, you know, as far as, you know, maybe different basins, different bays, different areas. You know, I better check this out at early ice, here, or as soon as I can get over here, because so there's a lot of perch over here, you know. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of that. And you know, what's interesting too is, you know, we just keep learning more and more, you know. The difference between perch and white bass is, you know, they're pretty easy to tell apart just the way they move, you know. And white bass definitely swim around and school differently than the perch do, you know. And so those two species are pretty easy to tell apart. Then obviously probably the hardest thing to differentiate is between suckers and walleyes. And there are a lot of suckers in Devil's Lake, like way more than what anybody would ever imagine. And what's interesting is, you know, there's ways to tell them apart too, but one surefire way is, I mean, obviously if you see a pack of fish and they're not moving and you throw at them and you almost feel like you're invisible, a lot of times they're suckers. Because usually walleyes are curious. They'll follow. They'll do something. They'll react to you. But what's interesting is, for whatever reason, and I didn't realize this until forward-facing sonar, but suckers must have to burp air or something, because you can have a sucker, I'm not kidding you, in 28 feet of water, and it'll swim straight up to the top, take a slurp of air, back barely come out of the water, and then swim straight down. You know, when you think about that, how many times you see fish where you just see their backs barely come out of the water, you think, oh, what is that? Is that a, what is that? Especially on Devil's Lake, you know. And, you know, I'm seeing that before, like, oh, it must be a pike, or it must be, you know, got a, you know, white bass or whatever. But every once in a while you see one, they, oh, my goodness, that looks like a walleye, you know. And not to say that walleyes don't come up to the top. I have seen that. But those suckers, you know, they must have to, for their air bladder or something, but they must have to just come up every once in a while and take a gulp. And so, and they'll do it in really deep water. So they swim straight up, and they come straight right back down, you know. So I don't know, just an insert, interesting observation. Just, I know it has nothing to do with anything, but it was just on my mind. And I would have never knew that, never imagined it, and never realized it, you know, without that technology.
So. Yeah, I find all those little things, all those little moments that happen when you're on the water, they're all interesting, and they all kind of account for something. You know, because they just kind of have you thinking, you know, a little bit outside the box of it, you know, like species identification, or just it opens your eyes up a little bit to like just fish behavior. Like, you know, what causes all that? But it's also kind of interesting, too, like, you know, talking about the suckers in Devil's Lake, like they're one of the few like OG species, right? I mean, they were never probably like stalked or released. I mean, they were,
well, so here, to be fair, you know, Devil's Lake was, you know, dried up at one time where there was no fish in it. Now, well, to back up, in the late 1800s, when European settlers first came to the region, you know, the railroad came through, there were pike and suckers documented in the lake, and biologists believe that those fish got in to the Devil's Lake basin from the Rock Lake basin during a high water cycle. Okay, and so those species have made it into Devil's Lake on their own naturally, you know, without human intervention in the past. But then, you know, you look at like the 30s and 40s, you know, the lake was for all practical purposes dried up. I mean, it wouldn't support any fish. And then, you know, in the 70s, when the lake started filling back up, and then they started putting fish in. Okay. But you got to remember that for many, many, many years across North Dakota, suckers were illegal bait. Okay. And so suckers ended up getting dumped in all over the place because of that. And that's what one of the reasons that they made suckers illegal years ago is because, you know, suckers would get into a really small lake and they would just, you know, from a biomass perspective, they would just take over. You know, you have a little minnow that grows up to be a 4 or 5 pound fish, and there's lots of them. You know, every acre of water is only capable of producing so much, you know, from a fish productivity standpoint. And if 50% of your biomass is white sucker, for example, you know, it's harder to become productive, you know. And obviously, you know, any of the dams or reservoirs, you know, probably have suckers that are native. You know, most of the rivers in North Dakota have native white sucker populations. But yeah, kind of some interesting history, you know, but there's a lot of them, you know. So.
Interesting announcement for you down at the St. Paul Ice Show. You had your own booth. You started a new company, the Sealcraft thing. Maybe this is a good time to kind of give that a little bit of love. And I'd like to hear kind of what that is, the origin story of it. And just talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, no, I was pretty excited. So, yeah, we came up with a new company called Sealcraft. And we debuted these vehicles to the public here this past weekend at the St. Paul show. And I mean, you've been around it for a while. You know, you've seen us working on the prototypes and seen all the messes and the parts laying around the shop, you know, as we've developed this over the last couple of years. But basically it's an inflatable raft, okay? But it's made out of a military grade 2000 denier TPU material. It's good, like 160 below zero. And it's very, very puncture proof. It's really rugged, durable. It's the same type of material that they use like on a military special forces landing craft. Okay, so people worry, oh, what about if you hit a stick? I'm like, well, trust me. I mean, this stuff is made for, you know, for being really rugged. Okay, and then on the bottom, we've got another additional millimeter of TPU on the bottom to add more reinforcement. Then we also have an HDP skid plate that's scaled that also attaches to the bottom. That's high impact resistance. Okay, and so there's a lot of safety features built in there. It's multiple bladders, so that way if one bladder were to become compromised, you can fill air from an adjacent bladder into the compromised bladder. There's a patching kit. I mean, if you had to, you could patch it like a pair of waders, but I can't stress how tough and rugged and durable this material is. I mean, it's impressive. And then, but here's the thing, is that it's really lightweight, and it's, you know, it's very buoyant. It sits high in the water because of the air, okay? And that's a completely different set of parameters than a traditional aluminum air boat that is heavy, right? That, you know, it doesn't have air in it, right? And so we're able to push these really efficiently with an 85 horsepower four-stroke fuel-injected motor. Well, there's a lot of advantages to that. Obviously, there's a durability, there's a economic issue where these are a lot more affordable, but then also too, it passes decibel restrictions where the SEAL craft runs at about 70 to 75 decibels, okay? Whereas a traditional airboat that's got an airplane engine in it, I mean, you're looking at way higher decibels, okay? Where you have to have hearing protection, and there's city ordinances, and there's a lot of laws in place in a lot of regions that prohibit the use of, you know, using airboats for recreational use, okay? And so it's a lot quieter. It doesn't have the noise pollution that a traditional airboat has. You're dealing with basically a four-stroke fuel-injected engine or motor that is it's basically the same motor that a lot of side-by-side UTVs use. And and it's just it's a lot easier to maintain. There's less that go wrong. Like an aluminum airboat, you know, you're breaking welds all the time. I mean, you're pushing a big, heavy aluminum boat across broken ice, and it's a rough, really rough, jarring ride. There's a lot of vibration, and, you know, welds are breaking all the time. You've got a big motor that requires a lot of maintenance, whereas the SEAL craft is kind of the solution to all that. You know, you don't have the maintenance. It's a lot cheaper, a lot better ride because you're on basically an air cushion. I mean, you remember from, you know, even when you're in them last winter, I mean, you go over cracks and bumps and whatever, and I mean, you don't even feel it early. It's like you're sitting in a air ride pedestal, even better than that, you know? And so, yeah, there's just a lot of things to like about it. We did design a brake pad that's hydraulic that you just push a button and it lowers a pad in the back. So that way it stops you or slows you down on glare ice. You can also use it to help pry yourself off of the ice if you let the boat sit on the snow and it melts and it freezes and it freezes into the ice. You can use that brake pad to pop yourself free easier. There's just a lot of things that we came up with just to try to make the ultimate perfect ice fishing vehicle for compromised ice. Now, would you need it on Devil's Lake or Lake Winnipeg and, you know, end of January when there's 3.5 feet of ice and, you know, there's no worries of fall through the ice? No. I mean, it isn't necessarily designed for that. It's designed for those same places if you want to get out first at early ice or out last at late ice if the ice is going. It's ultimate late ice rig. But then also, too, there's a lot of areas where the ice is always sketchy or it's always changing. You know, you look at like Fort Peck and, you know, any of the Missouri River reservoirs, if you ever have to cross a channel, if there's current, the Corps of Engineers flushes water. You know, Lake Oahe, Francis Case, all that is a prime candidate. You know, obviously Upper Red Lake early in the year when you got ice cracks that open up, the Mississippi River, even like the Madison Chain, you know, there's, you know, you're required to have flotation on your on your machines. Then you obviously got the Great Lakes fisheries, Green Bay, Bay Dinoc, Saginaw Bay, Lake Erie. All that water is a prime candidate for this machine. But it, you know, it's just a deal where it's a major solution that's affordable, that truly does solve a major problem. You know, and so it's been a really a fun project. I mean, the response that we've gotten from ice anglers has truly been overwhelming so far.
As we prepare for the upcoming ice fishing season, making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. If you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, I highly recommend you check out the North Dakota Outdoors podcast that's put on by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, a phenomenal source of all kinds of topics happening at the Game and Fish Department throughout the seasons. Again, if you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, the North Dakota Outdoors podcast is for you. You'll find it anywhere you'll find the JMO podcast, and if you want a shortcut, you can find a link in the description. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. When I observe the industry, and you go out on Devil's Lake nowadays and you see how many snow bears are out there, for example, and they are not cheap, you know, for the amount of money that is put on that, you know, like a machine. I guess I'm kind of picking on the snow bear right now. I like fishing out of them, don't get me wrong, but it's that machine doesn't necessarily expand your season in the same way. It doesn't add to the amount of fishing days you might have. Maybe talk about cold days.
Yeah, could argue it could, though. Like if you're say 70 years old and, you know, you just don't have any to, you know, freeze and, you know, go out in really tough conditions, and you can have that thing parked next to your house. If you live near the lake and you hop out in a sweatshirt and you're fishing when there's 35 mile an hour winds and it's just brutal out, yeah, you could argue that it does. I mean, it definitely has its place, and it's a great tool. I mean, it truly is. But, you know, what we're doing is completely different. It's a completely different application. It's a completely different, you know, set of parameters as far as the things that we wanted to accomplish. You know, at the same time, in say April 15th, and there's still 12 inches of ice, 6 inches of ice, but it's all rotting, right? And the shorelines are going, and there's a couple of cracks that have opened up, and the ice is getting is just compromised. It's dangerous. But you know that if you could get over to this one particular shoreline, and it's a mile and a half from where you access, if you just simply get there, you'll have some of the best fishing of the year. You're going to be in a sweatshirt, and there's going to be snow geese flying overhead. It's going to be a beautiful day. That's where the seal crap shines. You know what I mean? And so,
and you might get 2 weeks. You might get 2 weeks. You know, more season out of it. Like hypothetically,
for sure.
I'll be so jealous of people that have them. You know, right away. That are getting that many more days of fishing in, especially on the, you know, the front side and the back side of the season of the ice season.
That's where we see it, like where we're at, where we get plenty of ice and plenty of cold is, you know, you get 2-3 more weeks early on where, okay, at first you're getting out first anywhere, and then now you're getting the spots first as the lake slowly starts to freeze up even more. And then obviously the back end, you know, you're getting 2-3 more weeks as well where you're, you know, going wherever you want to. So, yeah, there's a lot of things to like about it. Remember when we filmed that video last year, you know, we had that big patch of open water, you know, down Minnewaukan there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were driving across the water. We drive it up on the ice, drive it around the ice for a while, drive it onto the water. You know, I mean,
you know,
besides an airboat, what does that, you know?
Yeah, well, what was interesting to me that day, that was the first time I had seen it in the water, you know, just like sitting up in the water. And I guess I didn't really have any expectation for it, but I'll say this as just sort of a, you know, just a, you know, being able to see that for the first time. I was so impressed with how it was in just out in the water. No, it's actually like pretty awesome on the water. So if you have to cross a bunch of water to get out on some ice or cross a bunch of ice and then go across, you know, some, you know, half a mile of water that the geese are keeping open. Like from what I saw, it was very impressive in both circumstances. And that just sort of stuck out to me. I don't know if I ever told you that, but it just kind of stuck out to me that I figured for sure that the water was going to limit it in some way. Like it just, you know, just in my brain, I just thought it was going to be limited in the water, and it really wasn't.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to take it out across the middle of Devil's Lake. I don't know if I'd want to take it across Devil's Lake in 3-4 foot rollers, right?
right.
I don't want to mislead people or anything like that, but yeah. And to be fair, too, you know, this machine, you know, doesn't perform on land, right? If you have to drive down a rocky shoreline or do a bunch of stuff on land, you know, it's not for that. You know, it's designed for ice and water, you know. And so you look at like Wheelcrafts and Argos and some of these other machines that have tires, you know. You know, if you have to deal with a lot of stuff on land, you know, some of those older machines might be better, and you know, for that application, you know. But if you can just back this down a boat ramp and slide it on the ice, when it comes to ice and water, it is superior as far as handling and where you can go and what you can do with it. So
yeah, it's pretty darn neat. You know, we'll have to make a video here whenever we get the chance of that thing getting put in on open water. The way we that
yeah.
day we but yeah I look forward to people seeing the videos of that machine in action, and yeah, I just got the biggest kick out of like we just backed it in just like it was a duck boat and you just bopped right off that trailer and away we went, and I was like, god darn, it was impressive. But anyways, yeah, I just wanted to give that thing a little love because it's pretty cool that you finally did the launch, and you've got, there's a Facebook page, and yeah, there's like it's a real tangible thing that people can look up and see and find, and hopefully, you know, people that could utilize something like that can find it. But anyways, yep. You know, anything else on that, go ahead. But early ice conversation, we got to try to fit some of that in here. I'd like to get maybe a status update on some ice, if you've been out on some ice at all, or what you're hearing in the industry, and maybe we'll get to a few, you know, buzzing topics, maybe some new gear for the year, or just any of those, you know, popular topics. But first and foremost, have you been out on any ice anywhere, and what are you hearing?
Yeah, I've been out on the ice and just around home here on Devil's Lake. And, you know, I guess what I'm seeing so far is I'm seeing a little bit of the ice thickness ranges. I mean, I've been seeing 6 to 7 inches in places, you know, like Irvin and Alice and, you know, some places up on Pelican and stuff. But then I'm seeing a lot less, too. So there's like pockets, areas where there's really good ice, but then there's pockets of bad ice that are, say, still 2 to 3 inches, and I have no idea why. I guess, you know, we see a little bit of that every year, but there's a little bit of variation. And then, the other thing I'm noticing is that in some places, the water is exceptionally clear. And I think that's kind of affected the bite a little bit, whether it's making the fish more spooky, where you've got really clear water, really thin ice, and the fish are spooking. I'm not sure. But honestly, it's been a little bit of a tougher bite. I mean, we've been catching some fish, but it has been just a – it just hasn't been a deal where we've been able to just sit down and just smack on them. I mean, we're finding a few here and a few there, and just haven't found any big concentrations of fish yet. I'm sure there's people that have, you know, I'm just telling you what I've seen and found, you know, but yeah, that's kind of what I'm noticing so far is variation in ice thickness, and in some places really, you know, clearer than normal water visibility.
What are some of your early ice strategies?
Well, one thing that I've seen, and I feel like my opinion has been reaffirmed by forward-facing sonar is that, you know, you get out early, especially I'm talking walleyes, like say like up on Irving or Pelican or Lake Alice, you know, where a lot of times we're catching walleye shallow, you know, less than 7 feet. Sometimes as shallow as 3.5 feet, okay? And obviously you got shallow fish. Sometimes these fish are aggressive, not always, but usually. And, you know, one thing I'm starting to realize, I've really been focusing on the last few years, and I feel like it's helped me catch way, way more fish at early ice, is, you know, when you get on a spot, don't look at the spot with the mentality, okay, I got to drill as many holes as I can so I can fish all over this spot and just pick it apart until I find the fish. Get on a good spot and figure out, how do I fish this effectively, drilling the fewest number of holes possible? So, you know, you go on a point, you go on a shoreline where maybe there's a little bit of a rock corner that sticks out, or maybe there's a little bit of an inside turn or something that'll kind of funnel those fish. And, you know, you can, with the fewest holes possible, you get right on the edge of the rocks and the mud. And if you could just go to a good spot and drill one hole and sit and not move and not have a lot of commotion on the ice, I feel like you catch way more fish. And so that's one thing I've started doing the last few years, or maybe I've been doing it with a purpose, is, you know, getting set up on spots. And instead of drilling a lot of holes, I drill the right hole, right in the right spot. And I sit there and I give a little bit of time and I let things settle down. And what I find is if you can fish these spots without causing a lot of commotion, you can catch fish through the day, even in that shallow water. And, you know, you just, I don't know. I mean, you know, even if you have a, you know, catch a walleye or have one come through every half hour or whatever and catch it, or at least have that fish take a swing at you, you know, over the course of the day, you know, they add up. And I don't know. I just feel like these fish are spooking way more than what we ever realized. We might have suspected it at times or assumed it at times, but there's a lot to that. When you have 6 inches of ice in shallow water, especially if it's clear, it even seems to magnify that effect. But trying to do a little quieter, trying to do it with a few less holes, and drill fewer holes and spend a little bit more time and just settle down a little bit. You know, and I'm not, you still have to move, you still have to look for fish and find fish. But, you know, instead of drilling 30 holes in a spot, for example, and just bopping through real quick, where you're just dropping in a hole for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes and then moving on to the next hole, what I would encourage you to try is, you know, drill one hole right on the perfect, what you think is the perfect spot. And give it, especially if you have experience in that spot where you've caught fish there in the past, and, you know, drill a hole, sit for half an hour, and see what happens. And if you don't have nothing after 40 minutes or at least see fish, that's when you make a move, you know, and make a bigger move, you know. And so that's kind of, I don't know, maybe a observation or a methodology, I guess you'd call it, you know, as far as some of the things that I like to do that I feel help at early ice.
I like that stuff a lot. Anything that we can do to kind of address the whole, like, clear water, shallower water, spookier fish, because that, not just Devil's Lake, that's anywhere you go.
Yeah.
And so, again, it's like for some people, it might be the first time they're hearing it, and it's definitely a big deal. You know, when the water is super clear, we're fishing these fish. Generally, a lot of people love early ice because you can find fish in shallower spots. All those things, I think, are super, super great. Is there anything like maybe presentation oriented that you like, you know, for early ice when you're talking about that, where you're sitting in a hole a little bit longer? A few things come to my mind, like, you know, the type of presentations that might call fish in, maybe utilizing set lines, just something that kind of fishes remotely away from you quietly. Is there anything presentation wise that you feel like is a good strategy for you early ice?
Oh, I don't know. I think it just depends. I mean, I feel like in general, you know, we call it a remote set line, whether it's a, you know, strike indication system like an iFish Pro or a Clam Predator, or if it's an automatic hook setting device like a Clam Predator or a Jaw Jacker or just an old school tip up, you know, I feel like there's definitely a time and place for that. And that's nothing new. I mean, goodness, I mean, that's how people were catching fish, you know, 30 years ago, you know, or more, you know, and especially you look at, you know, tip ups, you know, and the number of walleyes that tip ups have caught over the years. But I think one of the things that's happening is that more and more anglers are discovering the effectiveness of running, you know, additional lines in more areas where it was never popular before, you know. And so I think that is definitely something that's happening. Even tip downs, you know, tip downs have been popular in Wisconsin for years. And it just feels like there's areas where it's starting to pop up in more places. And my theory, I guess, one of the things that I think is happening is that not so much in North Dakota, but in a lot of other places, you know, like Minnesota, you know, I would guess on average the sishi disc readings have doubled in the last 20 years. And the sishi disc is just a white plate that you lower to the water when you can't see it anymore. That's your sishi disc reading. So if you lower it down and it disappears at 10 feet, you've got a 10-foot sishi disc reading, okay? With zebra mussels, with just different laws, you know, with drain fields and septic tanks and things of that nature, these lakes have really cleared up. They're a lot clearer today than they were before. And a couple of things, it seems like when water clears up, you know, your weeds go a lot deeper. But also, too, when those weeds go deeper, it just seems like it pulls a lot of fish shallower into those weeds. And so you've got that. But then on the flip side, it seems like when you have really clear water, fish do seem spookier, you know, where you have fish in shallow weeds and clear water and not much ice, you know, those fish are going to bump around and react to your presence, you know. And so, you know, that's where, you know, tip downs can really shine. That's where tip ups can really shine, is you can just put, you know, your legal number of extra lines out. And you can cover an area. You can just sit back and just let an area settle down and let things happen. So I think there's definitely something to be said for that. And it's nothing new, and it's no secret by any means. I mean, I'm not reinventing anything, but it just feels like more people are coming to that conclusion in areas where they maybe you didn't see a lot of that type of fishing even 5 years ago.
Is there any, you know, I haven't had this conversation with anybody yet this year about new products, about, you know, any of the new buzz in the industry whatsoever. Now, you were just down at the St. Paul Ice Show. You've been doing some Shields events, different things. Give me a little bit of an update about what you're seeing as far as maybe there's anything new, any new gear, anything like that that's coming into the industry that you think is interesting or worth talking about.
Like the Clam Predators, that was a big deal at the St. Paul show, and they were sold out just because of the new regulations in Minnesota with automatic hook setting devices. And so that was a big thing. Sealcraft obviously had a lot of buzz. I mean, that was probably one of the most innovative new pieces of equipment or technology at the show, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, there's obviously, you've got the rods and the tackle and the shelters and the augers. And I think probably the biggest takeaway that I had from it is you can get some really, really good equipment. And, you know, you can get into ice fishing really affordably. You really can. You can get decked out with some really good gear and be on your way. And, you know, the beauty of ice fishing is you can make it whatever you want. I mean, you can fish out of a snow bear. You can fish out of a seal craft. You can do all kinds of different things and use forward-facing sonar or whatever, and that all costs money, obviously. But if you want to, you know, I can think of a place where you can take a car and drive it down to the edge with some riprap on a causeway and walk out with their safe ice to a spot, drill some holes, and throw some tip-ups out for walleyes and sit there and, you know, I mean, you know, it can be real simple and real basic too. It's just like open water fishing. I always cringe when people say, oh, fishing is just only the rich can fish. Oh, it's a rich man's worth. No, it's not. I mean, you don't have to be rich to own a pair of waders. You know, and that's all it takes. You can catch all kinds of fish with a pair of chest waders. You can catch all kinds of fish with three or four tip ups, you know. It doesn't have to be complicated. If you know where to go and what to do, you can catch all kinds of fish, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of fishing, is that there's a lot of good equipment out there right now, and you can do it very economically.
Yeah. Yeah, and usually that guy that's doing really, really well with like two or three or four tip-ups, he usually knows something that I kind of wish I knew.
Usually, yeah.
Well, what else? What else is going on this time of year? Or what do you got planned? Or just, I'm just kind of curious to kind of get everything I can from you here. I don't know when I'll talk to you next on the air. So, anything else?
You know, just fishing. I'm actually just driving up on Lake Urban here right now. And, just fishing. I'm going to plan on fishing a lot around home. And I'm hoping to meet up with you. And maybe we'll go check out a few sloughs and stuff once we get rolling. But, that's, yeah, just doing a lot of fishing.
Right on, man. We'll be in touch. All right.
Thanks.